noticed the impact of us in our learning organizations when we have to skinny down. And what tends to happen is we can no longer be specialized. We have to be a universal rep. I always find this pendulum where you kind of have to do a little bit of everything.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward. Here's your host, Leanne Lankford. This material is prepared by and represents the views of Crystal Richards and does not necessarily represent the views of TIAA, its affiliates, or other TIAA staff.
Hi, welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, the podcast where we interview the learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your host, Leanne Lankford. I'm the president of Training Pros. Training Pros is a learning and development contract staffing company. At Training Pros, we like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us find you the right consultant to start your project with confidence. I'm extremely excited today with my guest. Today, we are talking with Crystal Richards. She's the Senior Director of Executive Development at TIAA. Welcome, Crystal.
Oh, thanks, Leanne. I'm excited to be here, too.
This is going to be a great interview. Let's jump right into it. Why don't you tell our audience 60-second overview of who you are and what you do?
Great. Yeah. So personally, I always like to start off by saying I'm a wife and a mother and a daughter and all those things we name ourselves outside of work. I'm very active in my community. I live in the Colorado mountains. And so very active outside, being able to get out and ski, ride our bikes, do the river, all those things that you like to do outside here in the beautiful state of Colorado. At work, on the other hand, though, if I was to tell you officially what I do, we have our own statements. I would say I craft and create executive programs that help to develop our senior leaders so that we can improve on succession readiness. Now, that's the corporate thing, but you said 60 minutes, so I'll tell you what I really think personally. I bring people and ideas together that spark future greatness in either themselves, their teams, departments, basically help our clients achieve retirement readiness for the future. So that's what I would say, like a real desire and purpose in life is that.
So you've been in learning and development for quite a while. What are the biggest changes you've seen in the last few years in learning and development?
I think the biggest change is probably this whole concept of face to virtual, which I know you and I are talking about in your master's and what you had researched. When I went to school in 2010 is when I got my master's of adult learning. I actually did my thesis on distance learning or virtual learning. And what could we do to make sure that we were incorporating every type of learning style in that type of modality? I loved it. I just thought distance, I just loved doing Zoom meetings. I was the odd man out because everyone at work was like, I want to be in the room with the people. I want to see their faces and engage with them. I, on the other hand, was like, I think this is the future of learning. So I used to develop programs here that were only chunked out based. They were only on what we had as like Adobe Connect, I think was the platform we were using at the time. And so when we got into COVID and we had to shift a lot of those face-to-face classes to virtual, I was ready. I had been prepared. I loved that type of platform. I loved doing breakout rooms and polls. And I think that's the biggest change is everyone keeps talking about through COVID, we had to, and I don't think we did. As a learning organization, we were already ready and prepared to deliver everything face-to-face as well as virtual because we'd been doing it pretty solid for 10 years prior to that event.
That is, it's wonderful that you were already ready. There were a lot of companies that were not. We did a lot of work helping companies get ready to go virtual. Suddenly they had to, and they didn't have a strategy for it. They didn't have the personnel or the techniques. We did a lot of classroom conversion. We did a lot of virtual classroom producers put to work.
We were excited to say too, like we could also show that we didn't see a gap in the net promoter scores of our face to our virtual. But overall, I would say our metrics might have dropped because the learner expected something different. But then over time, we saw them pretty comparable internally as well.
That's fantastic. I love to hear those kind of stories. So on a different note, where do you think we're headed in the next 5 years? What are the biggest changes we need to get ready for?
I'm guessing everyone is going to talk about AI, and everyone's going to talk about bite-sized learning and videos and just in time. I think I've heard a lot more about assessment centers these days than maybe what I'd heard before, where it was all that formal, let's take you to a retreat, let's take you to learn. It seems like that's coming up more and more. I actually feel like I'm going to be a contrarian and go the other way and say, it feels like a lot of research nowadays is talking about loneliness. And I think if we get away too far from the basics of learning and learning or development, what programs need to be with people? What programs can be moved to that more AI, just-in-time assessment simulation type of work? But I think in 5 to 10 years, what I would love for us to see is the balance. If I had to give you like the hashtag or the executive summary of what I think in 5 to 10 years, it needs to be the right mix and balance of both. Because I don't think we're going to get away from learning with and through people. If we think about how we used to learn way, way back then around the fire, we used to tell stories and we used to share our traditions and our values and lessons learned through that type of atmosphere, I think that's going to come back even more than maybe where we currently foresee. I just think everyone thinks it could be virtual and technology and Oculus, and we're going to be in these virtual environments together and have like AI videos of each other. I don't know. I don't foresee it. I foresee a better balance of what that looks like and when we use the right modality for the right skill set. I don't think we're there yet either. That's why I'm hoping in 5 to 10 years, we've all solved it together.
I love that. First of all, you're right. A lot of people do talk about where AI is taking us, but I love that you're focusing on moving away from the loneliness, getting community, connection. Those are the things that we do get in the face-to-face classrooms or face-to-face work together that you just can't get virtually. I worked for virtual companies, been virtual 27 years, and we will get together for breakfast. Some of us will drive 45 minutes or something to meet each other breakfast once a month because it's just connection. You miss it.
And I think that's part of what we have to build in our strategies and our plans moving forward. Like I also see we're trying to figure out how do we balance this with cost. It feels like, you know, more people is more cost. Face-to-face traveling somewhere is more cost. Maybe there's a place where us learning professionals can also quantify that though differently. So yes, it might be more money up front, but what do we see as the lasting impact on the behaviors, the cohorts, the leaders learning? I just had a story the other day. We were doing an executive kind of interview with one of our level 3 leaders. We consider our CEO level 1, and then her direct reports are level 2, and then the top 100 is a level 3. And we had spent them 3 days in New York in Roosevelt Island in May of 2022-23. I can't even remember that all the years are bleeding in. And this executive still remembers that event because it was face to face. And they told us that they're still meeting as a cohort group almost 18 months later. That to me, like the investment and the time for getting us all there was a lot and on the table. And yet, we built a small cohort of senior leaders across the company that still meet and talk about business challenges today. Hard to quantify that, but it's a lasting impact that we wouldn't have gotten. And I don't think if we would have done it virtually or just put them into a simulation and made them play on the internet together. Totally different experience.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how we can quantify it and make the case that this still needs to happen. And I love that you talked about the cohort groups as well, because with executive development, leadership development, I think cohort groups are powerful. I think they're really a great part of the career journey at a company.
And critical to the strategy. So often it's just go to class. It's go to class and do what with it? If you come back to a company and your leader doesn't support it, your peers aren't supporting it, your direct reports don't understand the language you're speaking, that learning dies, I think, in that moment. So the cohort and the people around you that support you developing it, putting it into action is highly more critical than I think the actual curriculum itself or the tool or how you got it in the class delivered to you.
I love it. Great. Who has been your most influential professional mentor?
This was hard. I'm sure everyone would say that because when I thought about this question, numerous faces came to mind. I'll say the consistency in them has always been, and maybe I've been lucky to always have strong women leaders. So if I look across, I can see all their faces from the very first time I started my job to current leaders that I work for now. But there's always, in class, we always ask people, think about that one leader that made the biggest impact on you, or think about the time when you had the biggest flow. And if I answer those questions, there's always one person that comes to my mind, and her name's Nancy Schreiber. And I had the privilege and honor to be able to work under her when I first joined learning, like really consulting around learning. What does it look like for a business? And she's still my mentor today. I don't get to see her as much as I'd like. But what I really valued about her was she was just that leader that had the calm, could weather the storm, could listen and not always talk. But more than anything else, I felt like I was just unleashed. Like my strengths were just allowed to play. And there was no push. I'm not going to say there wasn't pushback. She challenged me in times when she needed to. We did things different and she allowed us to do that and we were free. And there's never been a team since then that I can think back to where I was like, wow, I was really in the flow every day. I skipped to work. It was one of those moments where I want to be here because this team and this leader gave us a clear direction, supported us, and knew how to use our strengths in the times in which we needed to play to really deliver for the company.
That's a great story, thinking back to my career as you're talking about that and the being unleashed and just being able to really shine. That's empowering early in your career, and you need to find your way and find what you're great at.
I found that Nancy didn't just unleash the talents I was aware of. She was able to find talents I didn't even know existed. So she had that amazing strength. I think Strength Finders is one of those. This talks about you can see the person's individualism or something where you can see the person beyond them and see their strengths and then arrange them appropriately. She did it every time. And I think it was like the boosting of my confidence that lasted me for decades beyond that from just that one leader.
That's a great story. And I would encourage anybody listening, if you haven't gotten a mentor, try to find someone who will help mentor you into the field. It's so helpful. So what skill do you think is one of the harder ones to find right now when you're hiring people for L&D?
When you asked me that question originally, I thought, how about just getting budget for an open role is probably the hard thing right now. I don't know if it's just me. You even said it. When you're lacking people and too many projects, I definitely am feeling that. So it was more of maybe not the skill or the talent as it was the budget to build teams. Joking aside, I did then think about what is the impact of us in our learning organizations when we have to skinny down? And what tends to happen is we can no longer be specialized. We have to be a universal rep. I always find this pendulum where you kind of have to do a little bit of everything. I just spoke to a friend earlier today that said that they were out interviewing and what they kept coming across was, although it was a learning role, they were being asked to do like generalist HR business partner type of activities, and they didn't have that in their background. And so they were not qualified or they wouldn't get through the interview process. So I'm not sure it's a learning and development skill or talent, but I would say right now it's finding those individuals that have the flexibility, maybe the breadth of knowledge in HR to be able to step in and play the role of not only the HR generalist, maybe the employee relations person, maybe legal, maybe benefits, plus learning. And I think that's what's going to be hard in these next couple of years if we continue to shrink our teams and we're not specialized in just design, we're not specialized in just facilitation, in just the strategy of it. We're going to have to play all those roles, I think, for the next 2 to 3 years. And then I hope we all get to build back into our specialties and then be, I would give you the specific skill and talent at that time. But right now, I think that's what we're faced with.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
So that's interesting. And you know, you may be right. It may just keep going through a cycle where you must be super specialized. You must have a breadth of skills, then go back to being specialized again. So I know I had all of those different kind of roles, but I kept going towards specialization throughout my career. And then finally, when I left corporate, I was specialized enough that I could just contract as that specialized person.
And I would be missed to say, I'm sure somebody somewhere also going to keep talking about this AI and large language and prompts and how to do that. I'm just learning it. So like I'm in the early stages. But what I think about a skill set specifically would be someone who can train others on that. I'm not sure we're there. We are all learning it. So there's a few people out there that'd be like, I'm an expert in that. You might be an expert in prompting and AI and how to get it to do what you want to do. But are you then also expert in teaching others to do the same, to become proficient in it? So again, it's like that universal rep. It's not the person with the skill. It's the person that can take that app and apply it to learning and help others to build that behavior and that habit.
That's very true. A lot of people are still struggling with just writing prompts for ChatGPT or whichever tool you use. I've gotten my ChatGPT trained.
I know I'm still learning large language and the correct prompts and how to build. I'm still on the single line. I've seen people mastery like the 4-line prompts. I'm like, wow, okay. That's my goal by the end of the year.
Yeah, the better the prompt, the better the result you get. I find it's a lot easier to write difficult emails with the help of ChatGPT because I'm like, here's the end goal I want. Here's the tone I would like. Here's the situation. Help me write the email. Boom. And then all I have to do is edit.
Or rewrite you. I like that functionality too nowadays. Make it more concise. Make it more professional. Make it more casual. I've enjoyed that. Or the one I really love for leaders is help me prepare for my next one-on-one with X person. Because then it goes in and reads all my tasks and all my emails and all that. That's been like a game changer. If you think about leading other people in organizations and getting prepared as the leader to have it with each one-on-one, if your span of control continues to grow, how are you going to do that more efficiently? That quick prep has been phenomenal.
Yes, that probably saves you hours for each meeting. So fantastic. So let's switch gears a little bit. Where do you get your industry news and information?
I've been so lucky. I found a community of practice. Now, I know there's a lot of places out there. I could say I go to webinars, I go to industry events, conferences, but LeadX with Kevin Cruz, and they have their own company, but he also built a community of practice where one Friday every month we come together. And originally he was bringing like authors and you get to hear the author speak about the book and then you got a free book. Pretty amazing. I think it changed because he got so popular and so many people were talking about it. The community got so big that it's now us teaching each other. So just last Friday, literally, there were two leaders from two different industries, one from Canada, one from the United States, who walked through what was their overall strategy for executive and leadership development. From the top of the house to the bottom of the house, how did they do it? Did they do it for top talent? Did they do it through assessments? What programming did they do internally? What program did they do externally? Like just keeping the pulse on what other organizations are doing and sometimes leaving going, okay, we're not far off. And we're not as far off as we want to be. I also have just learned tips and tricks from technology in that community of practice. They've taught us, we had someone from Lowe's come and speak about how they use Power Automate, a free tool and resource that was at their company to keep cohort communications together without them having to do it manually. It like sparked an idea for us and we applied it to our executive coaching program. Because so often someone starts a program, then 6 months in, everyone forgot they were in the program. We didn't do an assessment. So we started to automate that. We started to tell the manager, the coachee, the HR leader, hey, you're here. This is your 45-mile mark. And we did it all automatic. And I learned that from LeadX. So if you're out there and you can go on LinkedIn, Finally Dex Leadership Development. I'm not selling them. I don't use them for any other product, but they've been a phenomenal resource to keep me up to date in leadership development and what we're doing and what others are doing.
Sounds wonderful. My last question is my favorite. This is where I get my reading list. What is one book you'd recommend for anyone moving into learning leadership?
That was so hard. Just like when you asked me the one leader, it's like trying to decide which one's the best, like the most beautiful baby. Like all my babies are beautiful. All my books are great. Like it was, so I'm not going to give you one. Give you three. And the reason for that was I started to reflect on when was the book that I was so excited about, I had to go teach other people about it. That was the book that I was like, okay. So the first one was What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And I always get the author, so I had to look it up again, Marshall Goldsmith. And I feel like it's a little old and a little outdated in some ways. But what I loved about the book, especially when thinking about leadership development, is it helps you to think about what skills might have gotten you to that first manager role now have to be adjusted and changed to now make you successful as a leader. So I didn't know what that actually meant, but this concept of up to this point, these behaviors have been successful for you, but if you continue these behaviors, they no longer will help to benefit you and your teams. So that was the first one. The second one, because I think it bleeds really well together, is Multipliers by Liz Wiseman. Because she also then talks about what are those diminishing moments, the behaviors that you woke up in the morning, you didn't mean to, but you were like, I have so many great ideas. And you diminish the intelligence in the room because you're shooting all these ideas out to people. So again, an idea around leaders unintentionally might show up, and when doing so, take the power and empowering their teams away. Both of those books really helped me to think about, okay, how can I help leaders to understand they're not one or the other, but where do they find the moments where they can help others shine, help others eliminate obstacles, noise? Kind of back to Nancy, right? What did Nancy do for me? She was able to eliminate politics, red tape, and allow my strength to really shine. And so I think those two books really were phenomenal as I think about leadership development even today and what I try to teach leaders within our organization to have the mindset, behaviors, and habits around consistently.
Okay. And you said it was three books you wanted to talk about.
My third book I haven't read. I'm interesting. It's the one I want to read next because I think it's going to be really critical in 2025. It's Greg McKeown. I think that's how you say it. Essentialism. I think he has this whole type of concept around simplifying your life, simplifying noise. And I think that with AI, technology, budget cuts, more projects on your plate, how do we help leaders to cut through the noise for not just themselves, but their teams to really be focused on the wildly important stuff? So that's my next book. I wasn't going to say I'm ready for it yet, but I already have it on my list. A great colleague that I work with now had suggested it, and that's for 2025. And how do I apply that? What books do you read? I was going to ask the other questions. All the questions are to me, but I was wondering, help me. What book are you going to read next?
So yeah, I'm actually that essentialism. I'm going to look that up and pull it down on my Audible to listen to. What I'm doing is actually about half the time I've read the books that the leaders that I interview suggest. So I'm like, okay, I've already read that one. Maybe I can review it again, pull it off my shelf. But if it's one I haven't read, I'm just downloading them to my Audible and listening. And right now I'm re-listening to one that I read many years ago, Make It Stick.
Oh, I love that one. Yes.
Yeah, it's such a good book. And I'm like, you know what? I don't even remember everything it said anymore. So I'm re-listening to it. And I do it while I'm walking or while I'm doing things around the house physically so that I can listen to something and get that done. Because according to that book, Essentialism, which I'm interested in, there's so much noise in your life, no matter what your situation. It's just, there's so much to do. When I'm at work, I have to decide every hour, okay, now what's the most urgent project? Now what's the most, and when you're done with work, then it's like, okay, now what needs my attention?
And I think that was one of the things they talk about. I was trying to do a little research before we joined, but it was like three basic things he's going to talk about. And one of them is the trade-offs too. So it's not only where should you be spending your time and energy? I think we've talked about that for decades, I feel like. Then when you decide where that is, how do you eliminate the rest of the noise, which is hard. I'm not sure we've gotten there. But the third aspect he talks about is trade-offs. The fact that we can't do and have everything. And there are more good ideas out there than there are probably things we can execute on. And then how do you stick to it? I think that's the hard part. The discipline of deciding, okay, I've decided I'm not going to be on Teams for an hour. And then when you get back to it and people are like, you're never available. And you have to say, actually, I am. I'm just being really thoughtful about my time and boundary. Like sticking to it when culturally people are like, you should be on 24/7. Well, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe that's not the best choice.
We cannot be on. So I'll turn off my email. I'll put a do not disturb on Teams and a do not disturb on my phone when I want to sit down and be thoughtful about something for a couple of hours. If, you know what? If it's really urgent, I can't imagine anything that's so urgent that I can't wait 2 hours. That kind of thing does happen. And the only people who can get through on my phone are my children. I've given them the access, but that's it.
And even then, sometimes you get the one child calling and you're like, I'm not sure that was urgent. Could we have talked about that when you got home? I'm just teasing. You love teaching that boundary too.
Wait till they're in college. You'll go like a week and a half. Finally text them. Are you still alive? You never hear from them. They're having such a good time.
That also means you did an excellent job as a mother to raise them to be self-sufficient, that they don't need to be calling you every day. So I say take that as a pat on the back, friend.
Hey, yeah, silver lining. Thank you. You've been a delightful guest. I have really enjoyed our conversation. You've given us a lot of good food for thought. And as a thank you, I would like to plant 5 trees in your name. That's our charity at Training Pros. We plant trees around the world. We've planted 4,000 trees to date with our reforestation partner. Right now, we're planting as Forest Fire Restoration Fund.
That's wonderful. I love that. Thank you so much. What a legacy to leave behind as we talk about learning and then the impact and it can grow. I love that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I know where you live in Denver, everybody is very concerned about the environment. I'm one of those weirdos who brings my own bags to the grocery store and I don't use straws and all that stuff.
Well, in the state of Colorado, you have to bring your own bags. We don't even have plastic bags at the store anymore. And I forget them all the time. So I have a lot in the back of my car.
Yeah, I have a ton of them in the back of the car. That's where I keep them. Fantastic. Well, that wraps up another episode of Learning Leader Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed the episode and you'll tune in next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.